This is Brian Trumbore with your week in review for the week October 6th through October 10th, the crash on Wall Street. I like this comment following Thursday's crashette from an old friend and former Wall Streeter, Pete Manjin. "It looks more and more like what the terrorists couldn't do, we did to ourselves. Thanks a lot to the borrowers, who bought way more than they could afford, and their enablers, the mortgage brokers, banks, and Wall Street professionals who provided innovative financing. And let's not forget the a-holes in Washington, the Greenspan Fed, and so on." Or as Pete, a diehard Boston fan, concluded, "Somehow the Red Sox in the playoffs doesn't seem so important these days." I watched the Wake Forest-Clemson football game Thursday night, and the announcers must have brought up the financial crisis at least six times during the broadcast. There's no escaping it. I also couldn't help but look at the crowd, particularly the students, and wonder what was going through their heads. Which ones suddenly have fears they may not be back next spring? Which ones' parents are suddenly in dire straits? And or can the student obtain a needed loan? In a normal economic slowdown or market swoon, relatively few are truly devastated, and it's more of a basic setback. But today, hundreds of millions or more around the world have been decimated. Americans are fearful and depressed, as a CNN opinion research poll taken last weekend found that 60% felt a depression was at least somewhat likely. That was before the carnage of this past week. A USA Today Gallup poll, completed September 23rd but just released the other day, revealed 40% felt afraid and 53% were angry. I imagine those figures are now 80 and 85% respectively. I'm certainly afraid and angry myself, though also frustrated. As we're all too well aware, there has been no place to hide in the investment world, unless you were short, except in cash or treasuries. Gold, don't get sucked up in this one. The following is typical of the damage thus far in 2008, as represented by year-to-date returns for stock funds as of Thursday, courtesy of Lipper. Large cap growth, minus 38.8%. The average large cap value fund, down 38. Mid cap growth, down 42. Mid cap value, down 38. The average small cap growth fund, down 41. Small cap value, down 32. And the Vanguard 500, replicating the S&P 500, down 37. The uniformity of performance is stunning. Good funds with great managers are suffering right along with the rest. Ken Huebner's CGM Focus Fund, down 42%, again through Thursday. Marty Whitman's Third Avenue Value Fund, down 46%. And while I'm not putting Fidelity and Magellan in the category of the above two, everyone knows of it, and many of you have it somewhere in your portfolios. Through Thursday, Magellan was down 47%. Even Lipper's intermediate investment-grade bond index, a standard benchmark for a quality fixed income fund, was off 6% through Thursday. During the discussion on the bailout, after the House first rejected it and the Dow Jones dropped a record 777 points, it was popular to talk of the $1.2 trillion hit investors took that day. Now try $8.5 trillion the past year, and then consider that when one thinks about basic pension plans, the average state fund has an allocation of 60% to stocks, so they are hardly doing well either. Wait till the damage in some of these is reported. In many cases, it will be scandalous. But what now? Take the $700 billion rescue bailout plan. It still boils down to whether or not the financial institutions that benefit and reliquify actually then take the next step and start lending again. Nor will my favorite option, injecting capital directly into the banks, which Treasury Secretary Paulson meagerly offered up on Friday night, guarantee the same. And it doesn't help when Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, even if being honest, tells us, quote, "The combination of the incoming data and recent financial developments suggests that the outlook for economic growth has worsened and that the downside risks to growth have increased," close quote. Or as the International Monetary Fund put it, The world economy is now entering a major downturn in the face of the most dangerous shock in mature financial markets since the 1930s. For all those talking that we have to be near a bottom, the fundamentals keep slapping us in the face. Just this week, we had word from five major, meaningful corporations spanning the gamut of economic activity. IBM beat on earnings but fell far short on revenue versus estimates as it released its earnings early. General Electric matched, but matched already lowered expectations and had little else good to say, except, importantly, it did see a lessening of pressures in the commercial paper market, at least for the day. Alcoa fell far short on a number of levels. Software giant SAP spoke of a sudden drop in activity end of the quarter, owing to a blanket budget freeze among corporations worldwide. And Bank of America, recently heralded as a hero, released its earnings early and missed by a mile, after which it was forced to accept $22 a share for a $10 billion capital raise, $10 below where the stock sat the day before. In my ongoing three-legged stool example, the consumer, housing, and capital spending, both CapEx and the consumer are now finally rolling over. And in another classic cascading effect, local and state municipalities are not just scrambling, but rather panicking to figure out how to match sliding revenues with what were, in most cases, ever-rising expenditures. The potential for unemployment to soar, even above 10%, is there. Globally, now you have an idea why I featured Iceland in the front of my commentary last time. I have a list on stocks and news of the countries I've visited the last 10 years, which means I don't include a week I spent in Iceland way back in 1982. My first night in Reykjavik, I met a guy from North Carolina who was a contractor at the NATO base in Keflavik, where the U.S. was stationing its AWACS planes in those days. And this fellow was a contractor for Westinghouse. So he took me out on the town. Iceland didn't have beer then, due largely to a very unflattering 60 Minutes piece I'll never forget on its drinking habits. And so I ordered a vodka tonic. After just two, I was feeling it. "What do they put in the drinks?" I asked my guide. He replied, "I was waiting to see if you'd say anything. When you order a drink here, they automatically give you two shots." "Yep, that's Iceland. One shot isn't enough. Let's have two. Or in terms of its banks and their ill-conceived behavior, let's leverage up like there's no tomorrow, while offering the best yields on a savings account, in which by doing so we'll attract billions from all over the world, and then we'll lever that up even more. I'm assuming before this week's collapse in this land of just 300,000 that when you ordered a vodka tonic, you received three shots, not just two." So Iceland's government had to take over and nationalize its three big banks, with the fate of billions in investor cash unknown as of this writing, and tensions between the UK and Iceland in particular rising. For his part, British Prime Minister Gordon Brown said the global crisis, quote, "has come from America," close quote, as he nationalized the British banking system, at least to the tune of up to a 30% interest. While Europe as a whole is ticked off at the Irish for its uncoordinated response to the crisis in its banking system and guaranteeing deposits, which caused a rush out of British, German, and French banks, for example, into Irish ones. French President Sarkozy was moved to say, "We want a capitalism of entrepreneurs, not of speculators." Here's what Paul Volcker had to say in an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal. In part, "Today the financial crisis has reached a critical point. The sharp decline in the stock market and its volatility dramatically make that point. More important, if less visible, the flow of credit through the banking system and the financial markets is seriously impaired, even in part frozen. For months, the real economy, apart from housing, had not been much affected by the developing crisis. Now a full-scale recession appears unavoidable. Important state and local governments face deficits they may be unable to finance. Recessionary forces are apparent in other countries, and exchange rates are unstable. The inevitable recession can be moderated. The groundwork can be laid for reconstructing the financial system and the regulatory and supervisory arrangements from the bottom up. The extraordinary interventions by the government and taxpayer should be ended as soon as reasonably feasible. That rebuilding will be the job of another day, of a new administration here in the United States, of finance ministries and central banks working together. It must draw upon the strength of the now chastened private sector. It will require more understanding of the risk embedded in so-called financial engineering and of the perverse compensation incentives that have exalted risk over prudence. There is and must be recognition of the essential role that free and competitive financial markets play in a vigorous, innovative economic system. There needs to be understanding in that context that financial ups and downs and financial crises will be inevitable, even with responsible economic policies and sensible regulation. But never again should so much economic damage be risked by a financial structure so fragile, so overextended, so opaque as that of recent years. That was former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker. In my mind, in terms of equities and those trying to divine the future, you keep seeing people come on CNBC saying things like, I'm looking at stocks trading at X multiple and they are incredibly cheap, or American companies are fine. To which I'd reply, how do we know? How do we really know where the economy is headed and thus earnings? How can you make blanket statements about anything these days? You can't. Because, as I'm fond of saying, we're in an environment where the best advice is to wait 24 hours. It was the worst week in the U.S. stock market, as well as on many global bourses, ever, as the Dow Jones lost 18.2%, 1,874 points, to finish the week at 84.51, its lowest finish in almost 5.5 years. The Dow is now down 40% from its all-time high of 14,164, set last October 9th, and it's in the midst of its biggest decline since the 1973-74 bear market. Friday also witnessed the wildest day ever in terms of point range, a full 1,000-point swing. The past 2 weeks have been like a sporting event. Just when you thought you'd seen it all, the market confounded you one more time. And we've now had an unprecedented 7 straight 100-point declines in the Dow, a 22% loss in just the first 8 days of October. But as many of you know, according to history, September is the worst month for stocks. While October is not only known for its crashes, it also is a time for making market bottoms. As for the S&P 500, it too dropped 18.2% to 899, and NASDAQ fell 15.3% to 1649. One of the causes of Friday's action in particular was a flood of margin calls. You know Chesapeake Energy Corp. CEO Aubrey McClendon, the guy who has been running ads touting natural gas alongside Boone Pickens commercials? It turns out McClendon was forced to sell nearly his entire stake in the company to meet a margin call. Simply unreal. And in looking ahead, while we may hit a bottom this month, Monday could offer more of the same unless the news environment improves over the weekend, because Treasury Secretary Paulson's announcement on Friday evening following an initial meeting with G7 finance ministers was disappointing. There does not appear to be any coordinated plan outside the extraordinary rate cut engineered earlier in the week by the U.S., European Central Bank, Bank of England, Bank of Canada, and even China. Aside from this, it remains every nation for itself, though the ministers have vowed not to effect any legislation that would harm the others, such as the protectionist measures that helped lead to the Great Depression. Also, in looking at initial reports from the Financial Accounting Standards Board, which was to clarify a rule on determining so-called fair value of assets such as illiquid securities, the FASB does not appear to have offered the clarity sought by many market participants, though we'll have far more on this next time as warranted. Lastly, on Thursday, shares in General Motors hit their lowest level, 475, since 1951, while on Friday, Ford shares traded below $2. This as both fight rumors they will be forced to file for bankruptcy. GM and Ford denied this was going to be the case, but there is late word GM is now considering a merger with Chrysler. In another sign of the times in the auto industry, Capital One Financial Corp. announced it would no longer finance auto dealers' inventories in New York and New Jersey. Well, that gives you a sense of what happened the week of October 6th through October 10th. I'll be back next week with further commentary. Have a good one. This is Brian Trumbore, signing off.